face, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome back to Saxon Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. It's Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures are actually down 4. They were up last night. They're not up now. NASDAQ futures down 76, and we got the Dow futures up 82. They were up 150 last night. So we've come down from where we were pre-market last night. So we're pre-market this morning, and not quite the same. So, Matty, you made Marco Polo look like a local boy this weekend. You went to New York and had a nice time, and your team won without you. You didn't get to watch the... Well, did you watch the Bears?
I watched the Bears. I wish I wouldn't have, but I did watch the Bears yesterday. Got home late Saturday night and hung out and watched some football yesterday and cleaned up the house, and it was good.
It's interesting stuff going on while you were gone. The Bears and the Irish both have a team who don't have an offensive line. Wisconsin was... I don't know what their story is, but the Irish have some pretty quick guys on defense. I mean, they have some, that defense is real. I don't think it's enough to take them too far. Well, they've got Cincinnati this week, and they're what, eighth or something?
Yeah, they're in the top 10. So it's, and that's of course, Coach Kelly's former, team. So, some history there, but that should be a really good game because, I watched Cincinnati play Indiana at Indiana a couple weeks ago, and, Indiana led that game the entire way through 3.5 quarters, and then Cincinnati ran a kickback for a touchdown and then got a couple of late scores and ended up beating Indiana on the road. And they're a formidable team. They figure out ways to win.
Well, everybody, people, is a guy who used to work for me, was a basketball player at DePaul, Tom Tracy, who's now deceased, unfortunately. And he went to Vietnam, I think, and so didn't get to go into the pros. I think he got drafted late round by the Celtics at the time. You know, whether he would have made it or not, I don't know. But he had a hell of a shooting, I'll say that for him. But he, and big guy, 6'4", 6'5". But he went to some, camp. They didn't have too many camps back when he was in school because he's probably many years older than me. So he goes to one and, they got some coach up there with all these X's and O's all over the place. And then as the coach of Arkansas comes out with this incredible Arkansas drawl, "Well, boys, I think it's all well and good, but it kind of comes down to who are the X's and who are the O's." And, which I think is, somewhat true. Would you say that, I'm gonna maybe list two people from the Bears that would start on Cleveland. I'm thinking maybe the middle linebacker and maybe, Akeem Hicks. You think of anybody else?
Yeah, those two certainly could start. Talking about Roquan Smith and Akeem Hicks, both sort of Pro Bowl caliber guys. Khalil Mack would be in them.
He's
in
not better than Clowney, is he?
Well, Mack had 2 sacks yesterday. Clowney had probably 2 sacks as well. I'm just saying he would be right there. But yeah, that's about it. Because Cleveland has on the offensive side, they're pretty much better everywhere, and they have 2 running backs. And then on the defensive side, they looked like the 85 Bears yesterday. Their defense has not been good at all this year, so that was a surprise. The Bears are not good.
I watched them in an exhibition game, and I don't know what station it was because I didn't see it yesterday because I didn't see the beginning. But they list when they put the starting lineups up there. You probably know better than me, but which station it is. They list where the guy is in the, if it's tackles, there's what, 60 starting tackles or how many games? How many teams? 30?
32 teams.
Right, so there's 64 starting tackles. They list where the guy is. In their offensive line, they've got 3 guys in the top 5. The Bears, the best one would be the one guard, and he's what, maybe 20? 20 or 25?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't have everybody in the team that much better than your guys and win. It's not about what plays you call. It's not about, to a certain extent, if you have an ingenious play somewhere that they're not ready for or something, being outcoached, it helps a little. But, I mean, the reason why you can't run is you can't block anybody, right? And that, you know, when I watched Notre Dame, has got no offensive line, but at least those guys, they had one last year, and they all got drafted, right? So that, I mean,
I agree with you for the most part. The only thing that really bothers me is that a couple things. So one, the Bears could run the ball a little bit yesterday, but they just didn't do
right.
it. They decided not to do it. That was one thing which I didn't understand. First play of the game, Montgomery breaks off a big run. He ends up with 10 carries, 3.5 yard average per carry, which is not great, but, you know, I can do the math. If you get 3.5 yards, every play, you'd get a first down every time and you couldn't be stopped. So.
Well, just remember, May, 3 yards in a cloud of dust is still 4th and 1.
It is, but 3.5 yards in a cloud of dust is a first down every time.
That's true.
So, you know, I think they should have run the ball more. Another thing, the Bears got burned 3 times yesterday on screen passes. My whole life watching football, and yours too probably, they always tell you, how do you combat a team that's blitzing on you and ears pinned back going after the quarterback? You run screens and draws against it a couple times and to keep them honest. We didn't run a single screen or a single draw. Explain that to me.
Yeah, I don't get
when,
that.
When they're blitzing you and their ears are pinned back going after the quarterback every time, and they have 9 sacks, and Fields didn't have a chance back there, and not that he
nine
even,
sacks.
9 sacks in a game. You don't run a single screen pass or a single draw to catch them off guard because
I think
what? And then you go on defense and you're watching Cleveland hit you with screen pass after screen pass after screen pass for huge gains.
I have a feeling that I didn't play pass grammar school, but a screen pass is a very difficult thing to execute. I mean, if your offensive line can't do anything else, you sort of can't ask them to do a screen pass.
I guess, but if you're in the NFL, I'd like to think you could run.
Plus,
a screen
pass.
I think
the quarterback really has to sell it too, and I'll bet Fields does not do it either.
I mean, I'm watching Cleveland execute it beautifully 3 different times against us because our defense played great through 2.5, 3 quarters as well and was getting to the quarterback. And so Cleveland said, fine, you're going to blitz and hit our quarterback. We're going to screen you to death. And they did for huge gains every time. And we don't even attempt to do something
Well, they're on the field like 80 plays.
And then they wore down, which you can't blame them for that. I thought the defense played well enough to win yesterday until they got completely worn down in the end of the third and then the fourth quarter. And then lastly, you have a rookie quarterback making his first start. It's on the road, and you don't run any sort of plays that are built toward his strengths, in my opinion.
No.
There's no, you know, rolling out and you know, shortening the reads to half the field. There's no, they ran a couple of read option things, but none where it was read option and then pass. It was all drop back in the pocket and the offensive line is getting murdered and the kid's just panicking and it's one step and then in first read fire it into a tiny window, which he's not good enough to do that yet. I think he will be. I mean, there's just, I don't know. I agree with you in the fact that the Bears' X's and O's aren't as good as Cleveland's. There's no doubt about that. And I think Cleveland is a really good team, and they could go to the Super Bowl this year. They're that good. And the Rams are that good, too. So the Bears, two of their three opponents right now, are potential Super Bowl contenders. We saw at the Rams, they blew out Tom Brady yesterday.
Yeah.
But that said, like, you gotta give your guys a chance. Like, build an offense around Fields. Don't try to put Fields, square block into a round hole.
See, now,
I don't get it.
Now, a guy like you, now I'm surprised that you just said what you said. Because, you're a guy who claims that the coaching doesn't matter a lot.
No, I think managing in baseball doesn't matter. I think NFL coaching matters a lot.
Well, I think what you're talking about is not many people, That's what set, boy, talk about showing my age, that's what set a guy like Johnny Wooden apart. He didn't have his system that he forced you into. He looked at his team. The guy won with a guard-dominated offense. He won with a center-dominated offense, and he won when he had good forwards. He adapted his game. You're right. I'm going to say Nagy has his plan, but no one is more obvious what his plan is than the guy who coaches the Irish. I mean, I'm sure there's other college coaches that are like that, but he's got it. Literally, if Jerome Bettis and Gale Sayers walked out on the field just out of nowhere and said, "By the way, we're going to school here," he'd have one of them on the bench. I don't have two backs on the field at the same time. I don't do that.
Yeah, right.
If you had two Mike Ditkas, well, no, we can't have two tight ends.
Cleveland has two great, starting running backs on their roster right now. So what do? They use them both.
Yeah.
And they run, and a lot of times they have them out on the field at the same time.
Yeah.
And no other team, I mean, does that, but no other team has two great running backs, but they tailored their offense around it.
Well, if you have people like that, what would, I think this guy would tell Jerome Bettis to go somewhere else and be a guard. what's his name? The guy, Notre Dame guy. But the kid who ran kickoff back, Tyler, what his name is? Is it Tyler? I don't think he got a touch on offense. How can he and the other guy not be on the field at the same time? When you have the best thing you can do if you got an offensive line, it's horrible, is the throw to a back coming out of the backfield if the guy can make people miss in space. Can't one of those guys be a slot receiver? One of the two fastest people on your team? You look at this and you wonder. I mean, Nagy's his you're right. His game plan is the same for the redheaded guy as it is for Fields. Why? They're two totally different people.
Completely different.
It's beyond me how and why they can't get Montgomery in space a little bit. The guys, all they kept talking about on the radio was the guy's a terrific receiver. Why don't you get him the ball out there, out as a receiver?
I agree.
But they don't. That's not their shtick. And they're just not very flexible.
I think Nagy's going to get fired.
Well,
but that I've never seen. I've been watching bad offensive football my entire life. The Bears have never had a good offense my entire life, and probably any of our lives, to be honest. And that was the worst I've ever seen yesterday. Ever.
I still think if you go back, and I don't know how you don't fix this in 1 year, but go back. What's the longest guys play? Like 15 years, maybe 12. And there aren't very many of those. Go back in the Bears drafts. The last 12 to 15 years, don't even look at the names. Just look at how many people they've drafted. They're so much shorter than anybody else. And the people they've drafted, most of them are out of football. They're not playing for the Bears. They're not playing for any. Put them up the last 15 years against the Packer drafts. And just, without even looking at the names, just say, okay, this guy played 6 years for the Packers. This guy played 2 years for the Packers and like 6 years somewhere else. This guy at least was a special teams player someplace. And just look at the raw numbers. It's outstanding the difference. A, in the amount of people. B, in how many of them are like still in football. How many of them never even saw it down in the NFL. I'm going through a whole 7 rounds. I mean, some years the Bears drafted 3 or 4 people. When everybody else has drafted like 10. They've just been a short staffed team for over a decade. Maybe a decade and a half.
Well, they valued their draft capital less than any other team.
Stone Cold English.
Yeah, they trade multiple draft picks for veteran players over and over again. Or they trade multiple draft picks to move up in a draft to get a guy they really want over and over again. And so far it hasn't worked.
Well, I think you need the people. Every one of those picks that you give up is a top 10 guard in the league. I'm not talking about Pro Bowl or anything like that. That's if you're drafting really good on top of it. But I mean, you and I, if we got 5 draft picks, you and I are probably going to pick. I mean, somebody might get hurt somewhere, but it's really not that difficult to draft a Jimbo Covert. I mean, in the first round. I mean, granted, he might get hurt. There might be something. Or he could already have a problem and need surgery like the Bears have done twice with offensive linemen. But it's all about, I don't think they want those guys, man. They're going to pay them too much or something. I don't know. There's some, and whoever is calling that shot is not the general manager and it's not the coach. One of the McCaskies is just saying we're not paying rookies or doing something. I don't know. But it's been going on way too long from too many coaches and too many general managers. So it's clearly not their choice. I don't think.
That's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I never thought about it that way, but.
Well, look at the guy. I mean, everybody glows over Theo Epstein as the guy who, put the World Series team together and he built by the draft and blah, blah, blah. Well, the guy they had before him, or I forget his name, the guy with the heart attack.
Jim Henry?
Yeah, Jim Henry. The guy, they got him from Minnesota, and Minnesota for years didn't have any kind of budget, and Jim Henry was a master in the farm system. That's why they hired the guy. Then they cut his budget and say, the stuff you used to have in Minnesota, you can't do here. And then when Theo Epstein hears, if you talk to anybody here in the city, they go, all right, Theo Epstein's a genius, the other guy's a moron. They're the exact same guy, pretty much. You know, I mean, one guy, and all of a sudden these guys said, okay, well, you can have the budget to do that. The Cubs under the Tribune, no, let's just get some veteran guys in here, you know, and we'll that are somewhat exciting. We don't care about the farm system. And he lost, you know, player after player every year because he drafted a guy out of high school and they didn't match the century to college scholarship and lost him. And, you know, it wasn't like, you have to be coordinated up and down the whole organization. The Bears never have been. They always think that the last 10 guys on the roster are basically cannon fodder. And yet in today's, now that you play 17 games, those guys are going to play how many downs, no matter what.
Yep. Every week.
Every week. And they still don't act like that. I mean, what is their depth anywhere? They just, I don't think you can compete. I mean, these other teams really know what they're doing. And you know, to the Bears, it's not like their people are idiots either. But you can't give yourself that kind of a handicap where every year for the last 15 years we're going to average one or two less people in the draft than anybody else in our division. Those people start to add up. You know, after 10 years, it's 20 people. You know,
what I don't understand is that, you know, I watched NFL all day yesterday because, like I said, we were kind of relaxing after a trip and watched basically every team, you know, with the Red Zone channel and everything else. You can kind of get you pretty much watch a good portion of every game. So I call it, you know, 32 teams, 32 offenses. Every single offense I watched yesterday, except for the Bears and the Jets, was competent. Even with backup quarterbacks, even with journeyman players, even with, you know, backups up and down the roster, injuries, you know, good coaches, bad coaches, going against good defenses, going against bad defenses, home, on the road, 30 out of the 32 teams were at least competent on offense. They could complete a pass, they could move the ball, they could get first downs, they're going to have two or three good drives a game, even if they lose and are a bad team, they're still going to have two or three good drives a game. The Bears and the Jets, I mean, they could barely get a snap off. It was like, yeah. It was like watching high school teams against pros. I don't understand how you can be so far behind everyone else on offense.
Well, the Bears cut their two tackles last year.
That's still inexplicable to me.
Which, you know,
they trade up to draft a tackle that has back issues in the second round. And are we ever going to see him?
No, well, the one year you and I have talked about it before that they signed, my memory's going, who was the guard they signed? Big black guy from, was it Buffalo or somebody cut him? And
yeah, Reuben Brown.
Yeah, and the guy lasted 5-6 years at almost a Pro Bowl caliber here, because he was a Pro Bowler wherever he came from. And he was a terrific guy. He anchored the whole line. And they got this idea that, oh, no, offensive linemen are guys you can just pick up because other people get rid of them because of the salary cap. Well, that happened once, right? Once.
Yeah, it doesn't happen that often.
And you know, look at their, I mean, the 84 team, I mean, Temp there was kind of going crazy yesterday because, he was talking about, because this is not what Nagy says, it's all on me, you know, we'll forget this game. He goes, no, this game, it was, everybody's missing assignments, everybody's got moves that people are trying on them that are working play after play. Is you have to take this tape and you got to analyze it for 3 days and see what is it you did wrong that you got to do better next week. You can't throw this one away. He goes, it was obvious that every single person along the line needs to do something different. I'd love to talk to Tom. I mean, I talked to him a few times when we were both young, but I'd love to talk to him again about what can you do in the end? I mean, what does one Jimbo Covert on the line do to the rest of the people? What if you have nobody like that? I mean, and they had, who was the other guy on the other side? The big tall guy. The guy from Cal. Keith Van Horn.
Yeah, Keith Van Horn.
So, I mean, they had two serious number one picks, and Tommy would have been a number two if he hadn't signed with somebody else, probably. And, well, Bortz was a defensive lineman, and I don't know about the center, but you had essentially three serious picks on the line. And Jimbo Covert was, he started his first game, right? I mean, everybody knew he was that good. So, I mean, I don't know how you have to have somebody like that. I mean, what if you took Dan Hampton off the D-line or Richard Dent? I mean, you know, you have to have people that are of that caliber. If you don't, I mean, and then they've got the two guys on defense that are pretty good. They're nowhere. What would you say, Khalil Mack? He's played as a. They drafted him and paid up for a 10, and I'm saying they've averaged an 8.5 maybe, right?
Yeah, so, I would agree. I mean, when you get a veteran guy like that, you're paying up for past performance. We talk about this all the time. As he gets older and he can't fight out, he still gets double teamed. He can't fight out the double teams as well as he did when he was younger. And he had a great game yesterday, but he's been a lot more inconsistent than they hoped. The good thing is that Robert Quinn, who was a zero last year, has been really good so far in the first couple games this year, which is going to free things up for Mac even more, and which is why Mac had played well again yesterday. Roquan, I think, is a special guy. He might be a 10-12-year starter, like a Lance Briggs type, that's borderline Hall of Famer if he stays healthy.
I think Briggs would have been a Hall of Famer. He didn't play next to Urlacher.
And Briggs still might get in.
Yeah. Well, the guy that you wonder about, because before the game, these guys are getting a little bitter. We keep talking about this Eddie Goldman, and I was Schwantzy or one of the guys goes, hey, look, the first thing about being a player is availability. The guy's been around for 22 games. Move on.
Well, it's looking that way. I mean, they could certainly use him, and apparently he's got a bad knee, and he's been trying to practice every week on Wednesday and Thursday, and then on Friday, you know, he seems to have a setback, and then all of a sudden he's declared out.
Speaking of which, what are you going to do? How are you going to replace your buddy Jeffy for a couple games?
You're talking about softball.
Yeah, well, you're the manager. They were crying for leadership last week.
Yeah. I was texting with guys, and everyone was really happy to get the win. We're 3-0, and we've beat two teams that typically would beat us. And we've been missing some guys here and there, just because in the fall I feel like people are busier with work events or traveling and things like that. But yeah, it was a big win. Jeff is playing hurt, and he's been a catcher for us forever. And then our second baseman broke his finger, and so we had to put him at catcher, even though he's a really good athlete.
Well, then he ended up at second base.
Did he? Yeah. He supposedly can't throw or do anything. At least, you know, I wasn't here on Thursday, but so we moved Jeff to first, and we've kind of slid guys around. And Jeff's been a hero playing on. He's got a strained calf and playing through it. He's never played first base before, and he's playing a good first. So we're piecemealing it together, and somehow we're 3-0.
Well, he got the winning hit. He had a hop down to first base because he really messed up his calf. And the left fielder throws home. And that field, I mean, my brother's such a... First of all, you know, everyone knows when you have a brother. And 90% of the time you love him, the other 10% you wonder what... Well, he was all upset that he missed the ground ball. And there was a couple of plays. Well, that particular field, I'll tell you what, the dark hole was third base. I'm like, Dan, you can't even see the ball over there. What are you going to retire over one bad hop in the dark? What's the matter with you? But
that field's especially poorly lit.
Yeah, it's okay in the middle of the diamond.
Yeah, Brands Park. Well, one of those fields, there's four of them in that park. One of them, or maybe there's three in that park.
Three.
Yeah, there's three in that park because they got the big tennis courts. One of them, there's a, and I don't know which one they played on Thursday, but one of them, there's a shadow over home plate.
Yeah, that's the one.
Oh my God! Like
it was the northeast.
When you're batting, it's like when you're watching a Cubs game in a day game, and in you know September, and it starts getting dark where they get the big shadow at like 4 o'clock, you know, between the home plate and the pitcher's mound, and they talk about the ball coming from the light and going into the dark or whatever. It's like that. You're in a dark cloud standing at the plate, so the pitcher pitches, the ball's coming out of the light, and by the time it gets to you, it's dark. It's hilarious.
Well, for those of you that don't, just to show you how the city runs things, they now are getting a lot of money because there's all these organizations. Well, there's two organizations. What's the Chicago Sport and Social? What's the one you guys are playing in?
Players Social, which is their competitor.
And so they, when I was a Ute, did he say Ute? We used to go up to Monroe Park or Beverly Park, and all the parks are lit up essentially around the park with lights that do a pretty good job. I mean, if you're a kid and you got 80 of your buddies and you go out there and you're playing, you know, softball at that age when you can see anything, you know, in the dark anyway, you can play that level of softball at night. Or if your grammar school team, like I played for St. John Fisher, wants to go practice in the park, they're good enough for kids to practice football. I mean, it's a general level of light, but it's not designed to light any one of the individual fields up for like a serious softball or baseball game. You could never play hardball, right? But yet there are some lit up fields in the district. There's one at Mount Greenwood and there's one at Beverly Park that they actually put lights as if it's a baseball field and light them up. The difference is night and day.
Oh yeah.
But then these two organizations have decided to use all these parks for kind of softball. Actually, I was looking at the light poles in that park, and I'm thinking, okay, there's two lights up there. If they point, they add two more and point them down, and got a little, you know, went to the high def lights that probably don't use anywhere near as much voltage. They could actually light this field if they wanted to, but they're not going to. I mean, there's none of that going on in our city.
Well, they don't even rake the dirt anymore.
Yeah, I mean
they don't do anything.
It's not a park district league. It's somebody paying the park district. I bet they're paying them $100 a night.
Right. That's what I don't understand. They're paying them. Why can't the park district take care of the fields?
Well, but I'm saying those lights are not designed to play night baseball.
No doubt about it.
For adult people at that field.
Yeah, our league is split between that park, which is Brands Park on Elston and Belmont, and Hamlin Park, which is on Damon and Wellington. A couple miles away.
Our lights there are better.
The lights there are newer, and they're built to light the fields.
Yeah.
And the Cubs, I supposedly put a bunch of money into those fields 20 years ago. So it's funny because Hamlin Park, it's lit up beautifully, and you can see everything. But it's too small for 16-inch softball. So when you're playing in the outfield, you're literally standing next to the outfielder from the field behind you. And sometimes you're looking right at him. If it's a big hitter, he's 6 feet in front of you, and you're looking at each other every pitch.
Yeah,
that's not fun either.
Well, Greenwood had a couple fields like that.
And so,
is Grant. Grant Park is hardly like that.
Yeah, so you're like, man, would I rather have the great lights, or would I rather play, the great lights in the small field where I'm holding hands with the other outfielder on a different field every single pitch? Or do I want shoddy lights, but at least,
let's put it this way. The older you get, you're going to vote for the lights.
Yeah. Well, it's also easy to say if you're not playing in the outfield.
Well, but in Grant Park, they were so close together, a couple of the fields. We had a couple of guys. One guy, Russell Gaines was his name. And I don't know what possessed the black community. How this kid wasn't playing professional ball, I have no idea. He's like 6'2", 6'3", ran like a deer, hit the ball a mile. He airballed the other field in Grant Park. it landed in their dugout. On a fly. We had a little bit of wind behind him, but not very much. He just caught one, and he nails this thing. The guy's like, where the hell did that one come from? SP Futures now down 5, NASDAQ Futures down 90. I don't know where this came from, because we were up pretty good last night. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollie. Just my Webber on the board. S&P futures down 3, NASDAQ futures down 82. Dow futures are up 61. What we got on the Amgen's up 177 and the Dow. Boeing's up 186. We've got Chevron Texaco up 138, and we've got Goldman Sachs up 385. Goldman Sachs has been very volatile. It's been driving the Dow between in the morning pretty much, well, I won't say every day, but a lot of the days in the last 3-4 weeks. We're in Europe. We've got DAX up 59.4%, FTSE up 8 cents. Let's call that one flat. CAC around up 21.3%, so not much, but slightly the upside over in Europe. Nikkei down 875. Let's call that one flat. Shanghai down 30.8%. We've got Hang Seng up 16, that's flat, but they've been all over the place. The first even day they've had in quite a while. As a way of review, on Friday, the Dow would close up 33, S&P up 6, NASDAQ down 4. So we had kind of a wild week that finished slightly, I think, to the upside after up and down all over the place. Bonds up 2/32 at 1.48. Bonds have had a sell-off pretty much the last 3 days. So this has gone from like 1.29 to 1.48, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it's a ways. You're going to see some mortgage rates going up this week, I assume. We'll talk to Mr. Flanning about that in a second. Bund, up 1 to minus 0.21. We haven't seen that close to zero in a while either. Japan, however, unchanged at positive 0.05. Oil, up a dollar to 75.02. I should have filled up the Suburban yesterday. Man, I only got 18 gallons. I should have gone all the way to the top. Probably could have stuffed another 10 in there if I wanted to. 42-gallon tank by having that thing. Brent up $1.12, $79.21. No inflation. Natural gas up 21 cents, $5.35. Wow, it's right back. I didn't think this thing was that big of a buy when it got down to $4.90. It sure as hell was. RBOB up a penny to $2.20. We've got gold down $3.20. Everything goes up except gold. We're not sure why that. I think Chinese are liquidators here is my suspicion, but I have no idea whether that's true or not. Silver up 15 cents at $22.57. And we've got Bitcoin up 379, finally up an update of 43,660. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports? A lot of sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a crash on the inbound Ryan already this morning. This is just before 71st Street, and this crash is blocking the right shoulder on the Dan Ryan, so keep that in mind if you're coming in from the south side. No issues on the outbound side. I-57 and the Bishop Ford are looking okay. Traffic building on the Stevenson and Eisenhower. We have one other crash down south. That's near Joliet on I-80. Eastbound side just before Cherry Hill Road. This is a crash involving a truck tractor, it says here. Accident is blocking the left lane and causing solid traffic on I-80 on the eastbound side near Joliet. North side expressways are relatively quiet. No issues on the Edens. Normal traffic volumes on the Kennedy. You'll see some red near O'Hare if you're heading out to the airport this morning. Weather today, a beautiful early fall day. Sunshine with a high of 84. Right now it's clear and 67 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, the same weather as Chicago. Partly cloudy with a high of 85. Right now it's clear and 69. In sports, the Bears are now 1-2 on the young season as they were blown out in Cleveland. 26-6 was the final in that one. Justin Fields made his first career NFL start, and it was something he would like to forget, I'm sure. 6 of 20, 68 yards, just a 3.4-yard average on his pass completions. That was a 41 rating, which is the worst I can ever remember for a Bears quarterback, and we've had some really bad ones, so I'm sure I'm wrong about that. He also rushed three times for 12.
Well, it was a record on sacks, too, so we didn't really get a chance to play much quarterback.
No, he didn't. In fact, if you minus the passing yards with NFL sacks, as they do, the Bears finished with one passing yard as a team. David Montgomery, 10 carries for 34 yards. He had that long of 16, and then they stopped going to him. No one on the receiving court did anything of note. On the defensive side, though, the Bears played pretty well for the most part. Roquan Smith led the team with 9 tackles. They also, trying to find sacks here. Here we go. Angelo Blackson had a half sack. Robert Quinn had 1.5 sacks. Khalil Mack had 2 sacks. Mario Edwards Jr. had a sack. So the Bears' defense was all over the backfield as well, but they were overshadowed by the Browns, who had 9 sacks. Moving on. Arizona Cardinals are 3-0, Chief. For our Phoenix listeners, they came from behind to beat Jacksonville 31-19. Sunday Night Football, it was a back-and-forth affair that saw Green Bay kick a game-winning field goal in the final seconds to upset the 49ers on the road. 30-28 was the final.
Was that guy Bosa a handful or what?
Yeah, Packers are 2-1, now leading the NFC North. Major League Baseball, White Sox took care of Cleveland 5-2. Cubs were swept by the Cardinals. They lost 4-2 at Wrigley to wrap up their home schedule. Diamondbacks were shut out by the Dodgers 3-0. Quick look at our Major League Baseball standings here in the final week of the season. White Sox have clinched the division, of course. They're 88-68, 11.5 up on Cleveland, which doesn't matter. Sox are looking to keep moving up in the standings here. They're 3 games behind Houston, so they'd like to catch Houston this final week. And Houston's lost 4 in a row, so the opportunity is ripe there. Yankees and Red Sox and Blue Jays are competing for wild card spots in the American League, along with Seattle and Oakland. Here in the final week of the standings. In fact, if you look at it, the Yankees are one up, and then the Red Sox own the second wild card. Toronto is 1 behind the Red Sox. Seattle is 2 behind, and Oakland is 3 behind. We'll see if any one of those teams can catch Boston in the final week of the season. Lastly, the United States Chief took care of the Ryder Cup in blowout fashion, handing Europe their worst loss in the series, winning 19-9 in Wisconsin.
Chief. Is that course spectacular or what?
Looks nice on TV.
I don't know if you're ready from the Blue Tees.
No, I'm definitely not ready.
We played it from the Blue Tees years ago. A driving rainstorm in the fog.
It sounds like not a good recipe for posting low scores.
Well, thank God it was a scramble. But it was raining so hard that you have to have a caddy. There's no carts, right? So our caddy is carrying doubles for whatever reason. The guy went down like 3 or 4 times. He hit a wet spot, and he just go. And we had to drag him to his feet. Jan, how are you?
I'm good, Tom. How about you?
All right. We'll have to you have to hang with us here a little bit. Jan's going to... It was an interesting weekend because I was talking to people all weekend, and you virtually can't get into a conversation but for 30 seconds before you immediately know somebody's political bent, whatever it is, and it's to me it's amazingly scary how many people are on the edges here and are, I'm going to say, somewhat clueless as to I don't expect them to do what we do, which is, I mean, it's our living to watch this stuff, but it's pretty scary, John. I mean, I was with some left-wingers Saturday watching the game, some people from Wisconsin, which was interesting. They were not happy. We went to the Tripoli, and ended up having a bunch of people in there watching the game. And virtually every group had 2 or 3 people from either Wisconsin and then 2 or 3 people from Notre Dame in the same group. You know, no fights or anything like that, but... Everybody's, you know, how much better the world is with Biden in there. Then, of course, I went to the picnic for Sunday morning softball yesterday, so I stopped by there. And to say that it's a much different group is an understatement. Everything that's wrong in the world has happened in the last 8 months. Biden's been in office, and I don't think anybody could do all the bad things these guys attribute to Biden in 8 months. I mean, the guy just got there. And it's stunning. You don't have to, John, you don't even have to debate the politics at all. You just, I'm past that. I don't want to do that at all. But I just point out some of the obvious, you know, flaws in either argument. And to my side, it's always the numbers flaws. And I say, well, you know, in the last four presidents have all doubled the budget deficit. I mean, it's not like this guy's any different. I mean, Bush did it. Obama did it. Trump did it. And now this guy's well on his way. I mean, if you look, and I'll say something like, you know, if you follow the numbers, you can't even tell where one guy leaves and the other guy comes in. It's just maybe a little bit different in the tone, but the same companies are still taking over everything all along the line. I mean, the drug companies are clearly running the COVID show. I mean, and everybody is just pandering. I mean, this idea, this who's the lady? She's not the Center of Disease Control, but she's, what is she? The lady, when they came out, and nobody wants to recommend these boosters for people under 65. Obviously, they don't work, or they don't work as much as people think they do, and they're for the disease that was 14 months ago, and they don't seem to have one for the new variant. So what's the point? Right? I mean, I'm sure it probably doesn't hurt you, but maybe it's a little better, but they're not going to recommend them. So she comes out with this thing about, oh, for the people who are, like, really important. Well, Jen, who the hell is important? In this COVID thing, the people that are important are the people that deliver your sandwich, deliver your Amazon, and take your garbage. Those are the people that are important because all the privileged people are home getting paid. I mean, it's not like the people we're guarding against are people in the military and those kinds of things like we used to think. It's the world has totally changed. I mean, I don't get it. I just, so Manny comes back from New York. You need a COVID vaccination card to go in any restaurant. Yet, if you had it, that doesn't count, even though you're more immune than if you have the vaccination. I mean, are we taking stupid pills, John? Is this really just a bad dream or what?
No, well, it's way beyond the worst dream I ever envisioned, I'll tell you. And of course, now the passports aren't going to be good enough if you've had two shots. It's going to be for every booster from here to eternity that you have to get this pass renewed. I mean, let's just turn it into a driver's license and be done with it. You know, your ability to exist is going to be predicated on you're getting this series of annual shots. And you're right, the drug companies are dictating this. Everybody is falling in line behind it. It doesn't matter really what party you belong to, because there's factions in both parties that don't really truck with this. But it's clear now that, you know, this is just it's a train off the rails. You know, it's not going to get better anytime soon. And it's all profit driven, Tom. That's the thing that just, you know,
well, the deal they cut originally with these places, the seven, we talked about this God knows how long ago. The deal they cut, and it was a really good idea. It came in the Trump administration. They said, okay, anybody who's coming up with one of these vaccines, if you want money from the government to help you, we'll give it to you. And if you don't, if you do it on your own, we'll give you a little. They bought like 100 million vaccines from every one of seven places. And the number was somewhere between $12 and $20 a shot based on whether or not you got what you did the research on your own, or whether you got money. Like Moderna got, I believe, this is a while ago I read this, $400 million from the government. So they were getting like $12 a shot. Johnson & Johnson, I think, did their own research, didn't take money from the government, and they were getting $18 a shot or something. So it was fairly well thought out. Well, yet, on my first one of those shots, I still haven't got my second one because they sent me away, said it wasn't enough time. And they said, well, it was $60. So how do we get from 12 to 60? And what are these boosters going to be, 100? What we keep piggy move up along the way here on these things. And, I don't get it. Hey, but Jan, we can fight about this later in the week. One of the people was telling me that I was at the Wisconsin game or Wisconsin Notre Dame watching, said that she had taken out her, I got a letter from the government talking about the city regarding her taxes and how her assessed valuation had gone up like 40% or something. And it's now like 150 grand more than she ever could have sold her place on the highest day ever. So I talked to you about that, and you sent me some stuff, and I sent you some stuff, and I was looking, boy, I had no idea. First of all, there's stuff you don't know. I didn't realize, what is the difference between The property tax stuff, Manny says, we can both be educated here. Evidently, there's the property tax stuff that goes for everything specific. It goes to education. It goes for mosquito abatement. It goes for all that stuff, right? And there's something called the corporate fund, the city's corporate fund, which is like all the other stuff,
right?
All the other taxes that are not on the, this is what they were talking about, the 2020, get a load of this. The tax revenues, this is in this corporate fund. The tax revenues are expected to be $518 million, or 23% below the budget, 2020. Parking tax revenue is expected to decline by $67 million, or 48%. Good on that. Ground transportation tax, which would be what, cabs and stuff, I guess?
Yeah.
Is revenue expected to decline by $82 million, or 43%. Amusement tax declined by $96 million, or 49%. Hotel tax revenue down by $99 million, or 77%. Wow. That's a real number. The only ones that are up are cannabis and something else. Cannabis and maybe liquor, because people drank more at home. I think it's cannabis and whatever.
And those were projections as of November 2020, I think, Tom. So yeah. I'm not sure. I would bet, you know, if we could get comparisons for the real.
No, these are real 2020 versus projection 2020.
Okay.
And now they're talking about how the 2021 budget has that stuff all coming up a little bit, but not nowhere near as high as the 2020 budget originally. Whatever. So now they're saying the tax revenue are expected to be 23% this year below the budget of fiscal year 2020. So we got parking tax revenue was supposed to be down 48%. It was down more last year or something. Anyway, but the
with the hotel tax, some things have just cratered.
Yeah,
so.
Even sales tax revenue,
right,
is down by $26 million or 35%. That's a lot. I mean, but then now they've got a lot of money from the federal government, right? So they've got some of that stuff coming back in. They actually did. What is this thing? The city's state collected sales tax revenue was sold to the Sales Tax Securitization Corp. I can't even imagine what the names are behind this thing. In 2017, as part of a mechanism to issue bonds for the city at a lower interest rate, because their interest rates were getting so high, sales tax revenue received by the STSC are paid first. So we've actually got a first. Whatever, what do you call it? Somebody's got a first dibs on the sales tax revenue, because so they can get their operating expenses and debt service. I want to know who the names are in there who are getting paid in this thing.
Yeah, I know. And that's, you know, that was kind of snuck through because I don't remember that happening in 2017. That was under Emanuel. And, you know, home rule allows you to do that in Illinois, but I don't think too many places other than Chicago have done it. I wasn't even too clear on where Chicago was involved in this.
Well, here's sales tax. Here's the sentence. Sales tax revenue. By the way, I'm what am I reading from here? I probably should tell people that. The Civic Federation. Who the hell are they?
Lawrence Mathal, and he's been the gadfly for the city for a long time now.
But they seem to have every single number here.
Oh yeah, yeah. They're the only one doing this. I mean, the city doesn't seem to be doing this on their own. That's for sure.
Sales tax revenues, boy, this is complicated. Sales tax revenues received by the STSC are paid first to cover the STSC's operating expenses. So wait a minute, they have a bureaucracy of themselves that we have to pay? In addition to
and they're issuing bonds then. So
yeah, operating and debt service on the STSC's bonds, and then the remainder is transferred back to the corporate fund, and our budget is proceeds and transfers in. Proceeds and transfers are projected to be $448 million at fiscal 2020 end, which is $154 million or 24% below budget. I'll bet every one of these bleeps got paid.
Oh, yeah.
Whoever the bleeps even are, I bet they all got paid. They all got their vacations.
I'd like to see a list.
This is like the Federal Reserve. Okay, we'll give you the remainder. Well, look how much we're giving you. Well, wait a minute. How much did you spend? Well, that's none of your business. I mean, so, John, how walk me through. You get a thing that says your assessment is now, it was $400,000, now it's $6 million. And you sit there and go, if I found the biggest schmuck ever on the best day ever, I maybe could have sold my place for $475,000 and now it's $6 million. Well, first of all, where do they get the $6 million? And you know, I mean, plus the fact that they're raising your taxes in itself, they should know they've just dropped your price, right? But they've, so I mean, if you double your taxes, the price you, that, that
right.
you,
what they say you're worth ain't the figure anymore.
So. It's not the figure anymore if they raise them. Cause I mean, if you've got a house worth $1 million and your taxes are $1,000 a month, and all of a sudden you raise the taxes to two, I got news for you. The house's not worth $1 million anymore. I mean, I hope anybody who's listened to the show for as long as I think some people have, understand that right away. I mean, if you don't, we'll have to have a review session someday, but I mean, you should know that right away. Cause when somebody comes to buy a house, there's one number in their mind, how much I can afford per month. And if the taxes are two-thirds of that, a house could be going for $40,000. It doesn't matter, right? That's why the houses in Flossmore are going for $130,000, and you couldn't replace the place for $1 million because the taxes are $30,000 a year, right, Ken?
Right, right.
So walk me through this. How does this all, it doesn't mean your taxes are going up 40% because there's a multiplier, there's all kinds. How does the formula work?
The assessed valuation that you get, you know, and now, I mean, it's been somewhat demystified since Kahee, and even when Berrios was our assessor in Cook County, they wanted to let you see that there was some attempt to give you a figure what you thought and what the county thought your property was worth. And that's the number that you know, they show you, this is the value of your property, that's the starting figure, and they look at that over, you know, the last time that this township was reassessed, which was 3 years ago, and they tell you this is what your increase in assessed valuation is, and this will translate to a revised tax bill after it's determined what the state levy is, how much the state's going to require, how much the city's going to require to meet their bills, and that the working number is the starting point for this formula that is still full of holes because we don't know what these final numbers, what the multiplier is going to be, what the final levy is going to be, or anything else. But the problem is that those numbers that they give you for the value of your property are arrived at through an essentially mechanical process. They look at the statistics for your property, its age, the number of dwelling units, the type of construction, percentage of the lot occupied by the building. They know all this from their previous paperwork, and they compare that to sales of property in a restricted area, and they can do this numerically by your tax ID number. They know the properties on your block that are close to yours in terms of their size and age and construction and what their sales prices were if they have any comparables to look at. And they just dream up these numbers and say, well, then your property must be worth this. Although, if you just look at the raw data that they've assembled for a piece of property, that has nothing to do with the quality of the appliances, the quality of the remodeling that's been done on the place, or enhancements that would drive up the price of the property. None of this is real to the person who's just sitting on the same structure that this place on the block has, that's had all these bells and whistles added to it. So you've got an essentially useless way of coming up with what they think the value of your property is, because they're looking at simple raw data that doesn't take into account anything that's going on inside the building.
Well, it really doesn't matter, Jim. I mean, a long time ago, we lived in Evergreen Park, right across the street from Chicago, right? So it was interesting, but the boundary was right down the middle of the street. Actually, it wasn't the middle. I think the street was Chicago's. Anyway, the Southtown Economist, actually the Suburbanite Economist, used to, I don't know what anybody's assessed valuation, I'm sure it was the same way, but they, all of a sudden one day every year, they would get this big fat
paper. Put everybody's name and address in there. Yeah,
and just address. There was no names. It was just address.
Oh, right, address. Yeah, right.
And it would just, they didn't do the valuations, they just said what your tax was.
Right.
So, I mean, you sat there and said, okay, well, our taxes at that time, God, it was probably, what, $800 a year or something? And the guys next door would be $900. And you'd sit there and go, okay, well, he's got a garage and I don't. I mean, there was a way to, or we had a 37.5-foot lot and a lot of the other people had 40. Right? So, okay, if you had a 40-foot versus 37.5, your taxes were almost inevitably like $50 more or something. You know, it was like, but if you look down the list, it was very obvious. I mean, it was pretty well done. Now, whether your taxes should be 800 or 400 or 4,000, I had no idea. But on a relative scale, you could essentially go down the list and make sense of it. Is there anything like that now?
No. No. I mean, there are published versions of this that you can get in some newspapers, something like community newspapers, where they will give you the tax ID number and show you what the assessed valuation is or what the last year's tax bill was and so on. And I'm not sure exactly what this does, except it makes it easier for people to seek out comparables if they're looking to contest a tax bill or an assessment. That you can, it's easier than plowing through the county records, spending all day pecking away at the computer.
But you can always find it.
Stuff and all this craziness stuff. So,
but it, you being an attorney, you can always find it, right? Because Audrey can usually always find it.
Oh yeah, but it's tedious, you know. And it's, you know, I mean, now they do have photographs and so on the assessor's website, and you can actually, you know, verify you're looking at what you think you're looking at. That was impossible before, even after they were computerized. But even so, you don't get anything about what's going on inside unless you can tie it up with some MLS listing and you can see what the property looked like the last time it was sold and get a sense for really how much this thing must be worth. I mean, if it has state-of-the-art appliances and a brand-new air conditioning system and a brand-new roof and all that stuff, you don't get that in the assessor's records. You don't get anything close to that. But they're looking at properties as if none of those things really matter, except if you have a top-line property that's sold for a huge amount of money and the same configuration down the block hasn't had those improvements, it's still going to be affected by that sales price, and yours is going to skyrocket up, too.
Well, John, when we come back from break, let's why don't we expand this a little bit to see what's going on with some of these downtown buildings and what, if any, crossover there is between this corporate bundle, which doesn't include the property taxes plus the versus the property taxes, to see how that SP futures now down 7, NASDAQ futures down 98. We've had a tone change from last night. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again. Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back, Stacks and Jacks. That's Amal. It's Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 8 now. NASDAQ futures down 102. We just keep sinking. Really from the last night when we were up everywhere. So we're just kind of sliding since then. Dow's still up a little bit though, because we had individual stocks in the Dow that are up. Mainly Goldman Sachs up 355. And, you know, when it's down, we got Microsoft down $1.90. It's actually under 300 again. And we've got, Salesforce down 307. Janet, just some everywhere, you know, kind of everywhere I go, it's like, not even like I'm I'm sure not Jimmy Olsen, Cub reporter, and clearly not Clark Kent, but, every place you go, you, just hearing people talk, you pick up a piece of information that just, you listen to it and you go, wow, that's not such a good piece. And, so how, when you have this, corporate fund that obviously is getting its butt kicked, and I think they got a lot more money from the government. So let's say the government made them even with made up money, right? It's an editorial comment, but now you get back to the tax piece. Because what I'm trying to get at here is we're having a big fight in Washington about taxes and about other stuff. And the question is how broke are we, and how and is it when I say salvageable, we'll all still be here hopefully, but how much? I mean, you look at the everything you look at, John, just makes absolutely zero sense. I mean, if you were, I always sit there and go, okay, now what if I was a guy sitting in the fourth moon of Alpha Centauri, where maybe there's people, maybe there aren't, and I listen to the news here, I say, wait a minute, these guys got the biggest labor shortage. It's all I hear about is this labor shortage. And yet they've got more homeless people living on the streets at a young age, and somehow or another, the low-end jobs they're talking about they can't get people for, yet they got people living under bridges that they can't find anything for them to do. I mean, the how can both of those things be true, John? I mean, it's just...
I don't think they are, Tom. I think the numbers are faulty in some way. I can't believe that there's a labor shortage, and we got all these, you know, new claims for unemployment that are higher than, you know, reasonable estimates would suggest. So none of this stuff makes it look like it's been coordinated or analyzed in a way that makes reasonable sense to me. So I got to doubt the numbers or the gathering system for the numbers or something, because it shouldn't. It can't be this way. There's something else happening that is not being quantified that I'd like to know about.
Well, I mean, Audrey had...
There's a great shortage of people. I mean, just the people have left or gone somewhere else or vaporized or who knows what. But you know, that doesn't seem to show up in mortality numbers, any that I've
well,
seen.
Well, it's just the disparate things that I have heard in the last week. By the way, you're supposed to be with me two of the nights, and you were, you must have that sock door absolutely arranged perfectly by now.
You should see it. I'll take a picture, Tom.
God. The lady that we met a couple, people the night we were supposed to be with us over at Martin Anthony's. Kevin and I met, a couple of ladies. One of them worked for the Chicago Board of Education. Says that at her high school, they can't find 300 kids. Matter of fact, she was leaving to go home and try and track down two of the parents and say, you know, where the bleep is your daughter? So in one school, I can't believe, well, maybe some are sitting at home and not coming to school, but or maybe they're watching younger kids. I don't know. I mean, who knows what's happening in a lot of people's families, but 300 seems like a lot. It seems like a lot of people are just plain gone. Well, I'm just, without trying to go into why, all right, so those they're just gone out of that school. Audrey had a condominium sold here in Chicago, or so she thought, by people from out of town, buying it for their daughter. She was coming here to work. They came to town this weekend. It was on the North Loop. They took one look at the neighborhood and one look at what's going on downtown and the violence, and said she's not living here, and been weaseled out of the deal. All right, that's a problem. We've got buildings downtown that are empty, and I don't see, when I say empty, Board of Trade right now is 18% occupied. I'm going to say 175 West Jackson, which is the third biggest building in the city, square footage. If they have 15% of the people there on a daily basis, John, I'm stunned. And a lot of your property taxes downtown are based on revenue, right, and your income, not necessarily on the building itself. So I don't know how that's going to shake out, because the taxes have gone up, nothing but up, up, up on anybody down here. Matter of fact, one of the cases the CVS left, it's because their tax increases over the last 15 years that they've been there are now almost equal to their rent. So they said, screw this, and they left. So you've had this exodus even before the COVID happened, because people saying, I'm not paying those kinds of taxes. And now the city, they might be sending out those tax bills, but I don't see how these places are paying them. I mean, where's the end game on all this? I mean, it seems like, can the city get money for the corporate fund, and can they bail out the schools and the mosquito district and all the other stuff, or is that also separate, or can they go from one to the other, or I mean, how does
they can,
this?
They can cobble it together from the government. I mean, they can probably piece together enough to keep some of the services going. But you're right, Tom. There is a brick wall facing all of this at some point, and it did really kind of happen in the Depression. You know, when there were so many delinquent properties that there was no point in even trying to pursue it or to try to sell them. You couldn't get investors to buy any of these delinquent properties. properties at the time. The whole thing just stopped. And of course, the services stopped as well or slowed down, and you had payless paydays for people. So we've been down this road before, and it took a long time to get out of it.
Took a world war.
Right.
What do you think? What is your assessment? And now Maddie's too, because he's heard of people talk here. What do you think would have happened if there wasn't World War II? I'm going to say eventually we would have wormed our way out of it. Would we have wormed our way out of the Depression with the same political system we have now?
I don't think so, Tom. I think there would have been a political realignment that would be anathema to everybody today, probably. That it would have been comparable to what happened in Germany or, you know, former Soviet Union, where you would have had a real takeover of the institutions and perhaps a violent takeover too. I mean, I really think there would have been a revolution in this country of a kind that we hadn't seen since, you know, the 18th century, and it would not have had a pretty outcome, and it would have taken a lot of other, you know, first world countries with it as well, because we wouldn't have had the stamina or the money or the guidance to keep anybody else on an even keel too. I think it would have been a potential bloodbath.
Well, I think we're somewhat running into some of the same stuff now, although there was a little bit of an attempt to at least force some of the money into the lower parts of the system that the government did put into the place. But we've got ourselves so locked up with the haves getting so much money that I don't think the rest of us can pay it all back. I mean, I hope I'm wrong there, but I don't understand why. Well, I'm going off topic here. I don't understand why when Powell, he might be a lot smarter than he thinks, but than he is or he appears. I'm sure he is, but if they know all the stuff that I think they should know and they're acting the way they are, I don't know which is worse, whether they're just playing flat-ass lying to us or whether they really are that dense. I don't know. I suspect they probably are just lying to us. But, I mean, clearly this Bitcoin situation, it is so obvious to me that the reason why there is a Bitcoin is because people don't trust these companies and their countries and their money. As a currency, the thing is absolutely horse bleep, because your currency is supposed to be a stabilization factor that you can say, okay, a car is worth this, you know, 100 cigarettes or 5,000 cigarettes or something. But when you have the price of your currency going up and down all day like a .com stock, that's no good for a currency, is it? I mean, anathema.
It might look like a way out for a country like El Salvador.
Yeah.
Still have the Bitcoin standard, but I just don't see that as a model that you could replicate.
But I mean, when you ask the guy a question regarding crypto or digital currency, there's only two answers to it. One is that you're going to take your money out of circulation as a way to control your people. That's one answer. That's why you would go with a digital currency, because you want to know everything that everybody does. Or people are going to drop right back down to the barter system, which they probably will. Because I don't think people want everybody to know what they're doing all the time. Not to mention everybody doesn't have access to that kind of stuff. I mean, how many people, how are you going to go to a digital system here, a cash-based system, when how many people in this country don't have bank accounts? 30 million?
Oh, yeah. I think that might be conservative.
Yeah. I mean, but on the other hand, you're debasing your currency. Now you're pissed off that you gave all these $100 bills to the Taliban. Now you want to somehow make them worthless? Without taking the legitimate people who have $100 bills with you? How do you do that? I mean, I can't figure out what they're doing, John. I mean, just like the thing with downtown, are we trying to flip this downtown property to other people so 20 years from now other people own it like we did in the Resolution Trust? I mean, what is the goal here? I mean, something, you don't let your downtown area become a crime center. You don't let your expressways where people can't even drive on them. You don't let a bottleneck downtown that's the worst bottleneck in the country while you're trying to fix it takes you a decade. I mean, this is stuff that it can't be that stupid. It has to be planned. Or am I just being totally conspiratorial here?
It has to be planned, Tom. I mean, in any reasonable world, you would think, well, there's the worst thing that could happen in a big city, and we've seen patterns for this already. Where nobody wants to go anywhere in the city. Nobody wants to come and visit, and nobody, you know, wants to live here or pay the taxes to sustain that kind of an operation. We know that's the downside of where the trend is, and you would think it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, it gets harder to fix the longer you let it decline this way. But there has to be some method to this. There has to be somebody who benefits from it that wants it to happen and is just watching it unfold in a predictable way here. And to everybody else, it looks like insanity. But I don't know who those people are, and I don't know what they've got, you know, in mind.
How do they get the time horizon? We hear all the time about the Chinese have the time horizon of like a century or something. And
right, and the log is, you know, they're thinking millennia.
Yeah. But I mean, you sent me some stuff regarding Inglewood. You might want to, why don't you summarize that for everybody? Because I read and I heard from one of our buddies, who, this is 10 years ago, who were buying up a lot of these vacant lots in Inglewood. Well, Jen, they're not you or me. Even if we had grandkids, it's not going to be worth a crap till they have kids. I mean, we're talking 100 years out. I mean, the places you can think of that have that kind of a time horizon are the University of Chicago. I mean, they were buying stuff around there. I mean, you wouldn't walk past the Midway when it was dark going south. Now they've bought up how many blocks going south?
And we're doing this, you know, 60, 70 years ago too.
Yeah, and DePaul did the same thing, and because right. That area wasn't that much better when I mean back in the 70s. It was a little bit better, but not much. Inglewood is going to be, after you tell everybody what you sent me, we're talking about somebody wants the area. Now, it's close enough to downtown. It's not like Harlem, where it's right there, but it has subway service. It has Rock Island service, if you put the station back. It could have
I-94 running through it.
You know, you got I-94 running through it. I mean, it has serious bus routes. It really has a couple of different rail lines, really, almost. Is somebody's got their eye on this thing 60 years from now or what? And yet they're willing to let the whole area go into the rat hole in the meantime? I mean, you and I wouldn't do that because we don't have that kind of time. Well, tell everybody what's going on in Inglewood.
Yeah, well, I mean, a couple of weeks ago on the show, I was wondering if I could see some kind of data for what happened to the number of housing units in a census tract over the last 10 years, and now that data has come out, and it shows that Englewood led the city in loss of dwelling units to the tune of almost 1,500 dwelling units.
Englewood is, for those of you, if you took a picture of Chicago, it's on the south side, about halfway, the city goes to roughly 119th Street, so Inglewood is what, 63rd Street is the middle of it. So it's like it's right in the middle of the South Side from, let's say, State Street all the way to, well, if you take all the way to say Kedzie, correct? So it's
right.
It's probably from
and 63rd and Halsted. Even in my time town, that was the largest retail district outside of downtown Chicago.
Yes, because the L pretty much ended there. Bunch of bus lines,
major stores.
Yeah, you know, major stores.
It was a bustling area. And it's been decimated since 2010.
It's
partly
because
of the housing disaster, where unqualified people were being pushed to buy places, and they abandoned them, and the city tore them down. Well, the Norfolk and Southern Railway has bought up a whole bunch of these around 57th and Normal, and they were doing this before, you know, the crime crisis in Englewood, and they were using eminent domain to get people out of there and buying up properties, and nothing's been built, as far as I can tell, by the Norfolk and Southern. But they've amassed a large chunk of land that's you know, I don't know what.
Well, it's right next to the railroad. It's right next to their railroad track. So they're
right.
Probably thinking about selling.
You know, as shops or as a development center, or warehousing or, you know, whatever. I mean, then they had some kind of design for it.
Well, that was one of the original, Jen, I think that was the original site of where the big UPS distribution center was going to go, and they ended up putting it out in the western suburbs.
Yes, right time. And it looked like the Norfolk and Southern had some kind of plan similar to that, as a transportation hub that could serve freight, not passenger service, I'm sure, but this would be a real perfectly located place to get truck traffic in and out, to link it up with railroads and so on. But that, nothing seems to have happened. And, of course, the people who were displaced are outraged. And, you know, they've had, like, you know, lawsuits and everything else trying to find out what's going on and what's holding this thing up. It's one thing to lose your house to a developer, but when you see the developer just sits on the property and isn't developing it, it makes you wonder, what was this for? And is everybody just being hoodwinked, and is everybody vulnerable to that kind of aggrandizement of land for no apparent
reason? I think an awful lot of people got their eye on Inglewood, and they got to be companies because people won't last that long. And when I say that, I'm not kidding. I'm talking about it's a 30-year plan.
Right, and the Norfolk and Southern is whatever plans they may have had and whatever reasons they gave for buying up all this stuff, they're sitting back now and becoming a player of a different sort, because they realize they can be a broker now for a huge piece of land to somebody else that may come in and pay them far more than they could ever make by developing the property themselves.
Well, our buddy, we'll go nameless, told me that there was a big group in Ireland was buying up a lot of places. And, you know, and we're talking about, you know, hundreds and hundreds of properties. And if you look at a city block, there'll be some of them are five houses left. And these basically are African-American people. And if you look at the last census in the last 10 years, there's 80,000 less black people in the city. It's a huge number. I mean, they're all being forced, back. It's essentially the Great American Migration in reverse. They're going south suburbs, or they're going back down south, basically. Right? I mean,
What's interesting, too, Tom, is that, you know, the two largest losses in dwelling units were Englewood and West Englewood.
Right.
Which were, you know, Englewood was almost 1,500, and West Englewood was not far behind. But then the third one was Rosen, which I think was 494, you know, lost properties, which is, I mean, that's comparatively small, given what's
happening. Well, but you're talking about, these are areas that used to have jobs. I mean, Englewood had, on Western Avenue, there was a Continental Can.
Right.
They had Ream Manufacturing. They had Nabisco, which was a skeleton group. They had Bloomer Fisk, was there at 61st. They used to manufacture a lot of the parts for Pullman. I mean, these places are all gone. They're stone cold gone, right? I mean, they're just empty lots. If you go down Western Boulevard, how many of those, there's one factory after another? With a rail right behind them, those several different railroads, could go anywhere in the country from there. They're all empty. There's like two or three of them that still have stuff going on. But nobody wants any places. Because, you know, I don't know, because of the violence, because they're old, whatever it is. I don't know. But I mean, I don't know when you just keep mounting up this debt and you look at the numbers that we go over with Carl, and more people are in the column where, you know, they're being paid by other people. We've got, you know, somehow, someplace, Jan, somebody has to turn this bus around and relatively quickly, because the politics are going to get even worse because the economics are going to be worse. And it's not about pumping the stock market up and having a few people get all this stuff, or even 401ks, because someday, somewhere, that's going to go down. And as a matter of fact, one of the people I was talking to on Saturday, this lady, and she's got all this money in her account. Of course, she's asking me, you know, essentially investment advice. And everything I say, of course, you know, is the wrong thing. Well, I've only got two or three stocks, and I've got, like, all my money in two or three stocks. Well, you know, that's a concentration issue. It's not probably ideal. I mean, if I were to do that for you and something fell apart, I mean, the complaint would be you weren't diversified, but it's your own account, so you can do whatever you want. Well, but I like these stocks. Okay, then what are you asking me for? I mean, you're not protected, and by the way, you've got a big percentage of your wealth in one stock, and I don't care who it is. I mean, whether it's, look at the stocks that have gone out in the last 20 years. I mean, Sears, Citigroup is pretty much out. They're not out, but if you look at the amount of reverse split, you're still not whole. Let's see, United Airlines, General Motors. These were real stocks, Jan. Kmart. And they all went broke. I mean, broke. You got nothing. So, I mean, concentration issues are a problem. I mean, if you happen to have the wrong one, you know, and obviously so far, if your concentration issue is Apple or Microsoft, you've done fine. But I don't know. What will the next 20 years bring? Can't predict. Neither can you, right?
Right.
I mean, the
city, I think, has fixated on, and speaking of concentration, I mean, I think the city sees Englewood, if they have any kind of vision at all, I think they've taken a very aggressive approach to getting rid of substandard properties in this neighborhood that is one of the oldest, you know, formerly viable neighborhoods in the city. And it had aging housing stock and everything else. But what seems clear in what I've been reading in the last couple of days is that the city has not wasted a minute in getting in and knocking this stuff down. My experience used to be just looking at the way properties played out. You could have a building in housing court for years, for a decade, and fiddle around with it and make repairs here and there and get the city off your back or pay a fine or whatever. But the property would gradually decline, and finally, out of desperation, the city would knock it down, put a lien on the property for the demolition costs, foreclose on the lien, and get title to the property. But this was often a 20-year process.
Yeah, but Jen, I don't want
some neighbors.
If you give
in
me
Englewood, it isn't like that. It's been a bulldozer effect. The city has not played around, which makes me think that they have some plan here that they've gone into overdrive over, and they're not waiting the way they used to, and they're doing it systematically. It seems to just obliterate.
Well, they don't want people. The excuse is they don't want people living there. But if you give me 2,000 people that are on the border from Guatemala. And give me an old high school that has showers and stuff where I can put these people up for a year or so. I want the houses up so we can repair them. I don't want them down.
Right. Right. I mean, you would think that would be just from a standpoint of keeping morale high or making it attractive for businesses and having a little bit of charm in a neighborhood instead of making it look like, you know, a battlefield. This would have more cachet for investors, you know, than just here's a hunk of undeveloped land. Do you have a dream for it?
You're like block after block with nothing on it. I mean, what?
Right. Or maybe what's worse is a lone house in the middle of a block. Could you imagine living in that house? What kind of emotional state are those people?
You know, it's like living on a farm, except you got people driving by shooting at you.
I guess my way of saying that perhaps the city has a strategy here, and it involves depopulating Englewood, and who knows what other neighborhoods might be on its radar. But to what end, Tom? And you know what is it?
Jen, we're not
making money for the city, or is it going to end up costing money for the people who are left behind?
Jen, we're not San Francisco with that small of a footprint where you can go with a totally, I'll say, upper class. You know, everybody works in the financial industry or that kinds of things. Even though the financial industry got less people working. You can't go there in a city with 3 million people. Chicago's too big. You have to have regular jobs here of some kind. And I'm not saying all of them got to be welders and stuff, but you've got to have, you know, you got to have jobs for 1.5 million people. You're not going to do that, especially when you get rid of the trading floors and everything else. You know, I mean, so I asked you the question you never answered. What's going to happen? Let's pick a building, 175 West Jackson. What happens to those guys if all of a sudden first of all, they lost the CVS. They got nobody downstairs. They got the flower guy still there, but Pug Mahone's left. I think Potbelly's is still there. But I mean, what happens to that building when all of a sudden people either don't pay the rent and all of a sudden says, well, you know, I really wanted to come into work, but I couldn't get my people upstairs because it's 6 foot apart in the elevator. I could only get, you know, 50 people upstairs by 8 o'clock and I needed 500. I mean, what happens when they tell a city we can't pay? I mean, the city can own all these buildings, or are they going to try and auction them? What are they going to do?
Well, they'll in a better time, they could have converted it to apartments and you have people flocking to rent downtown, which ain't going to happen anymore either.
No.
So maybe it'll be like what they're suggesting for the Thompson Center, the State of Illinois building. Let's turn it into a water park. You know, of course, you still have to get people to feel safe coming downtown to the water park. I see it being raised, Tom. It'll be a vacant lot like you see all over Englewood.
Well, how long did it take that building? I remember, for those of you who don't know Chicago history, was it Block 48?
37.
Block 37. They had three or four of these old movie theaters on there, and they had a bunch of other stuff. But there were some regular stores. I mean, there were stores on State Street. And all of a sudden, they had to tear it down, They got buyers, they're going to develop it. Was that 2 decades? There was only one building up because it was
the McCarthy building, yeah.
No, they had the, what was it?
They had the substation for the Commonwealth Edison.
The Commonwealth Edison substation. That was the whole block was empty. They had ice skating rinks there for, 10 years?
Advertising signs, you know, it was a mess.
Yeah, and
then they put up a building where the CBS TV studios are now. And the irony, in the meantime, Tom, the red line station underneath that was the busiest in the whole system, has been completely torn up now so that you can't go from the red line to the blue line. They just filled up the whole hole.
Why?
Because they ran out of money.
Well, you can still get one to the other in Jackson, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, where the Zaley Center, City Hall, you know, the theater district, all this stuff was right above ground. They had these grandiose plans to turn it into a, you know, terminal for high-speed rail to O'Hare. Instead, they ended up running out of money and just filled in the passageway between the two systems.
Instead, it's a homeless train to O'Hare.
Yeah.
The thing's loaded with homeless.
Homeless center.
Yeah, so, I mean, anybody coming to Chicago, if you take the blue line downtown from O'Hare, you're tripping over homeless people on the train. Jan, I think the federal government gave enough money to balance them up, because we've talked about a whole bunch of stuff. Let's try and tie it together. We only got a minute. Has the population dropped that much in the last year and a half? I think a lot of people are just plain gone.
I do too, Tom.
How could it
translates into the employment problems we've seen. People who were maybe living under the radar and didn't turn up on you know, statistics that you could publish or analyze. But in any event, there's been a huge drop in the workforce. And I would say that means a drop in the population. And we never maybe had a good handle on it anyway, so we don't know the extent to which we've lost people now because we didn't have good numbers to start with. But it's part of a larger problem that the cities are becoming just a place to be avoided.
Well, Jen, someplace, somewhere, somebody has to know the number of how many less kids, if that lady's high school is at all indicative, there's got to be a number somewhere that says there's 20,000 or 10,000 or 5,000 less students in high school.
Oh,
in the world.
And I think they know in a local sense, they know exactly how much these schools individually are down, and you're going to see another wave of school closures like you did back in 2012. Maybe even more draconian this time because I think the numbers are even more startling than they were then.
But it still doesn't answer my question. Where the hell did they all go?
I don't know. They got out of Dodge, Tom. I think they went back. If they were from another country, they perhaps went back to that country. They're holding up someplace else. I think that a lot of them have dispersed to smaller towns, too, where they, you know, whatever kind of agricultural jobs there are around.
I mean, a lot, you think Texas?
Working for agribusinesses, or who knows? I mean, these people, you know, don't leave a paper trail often so that you can trace where they're doing their banking or where they're purchasing or selling real estate, because they don't do that. And a lot of them don't have bank accounts, and we don't really get, you know, good numbers except remittances to other countries. I'm sure if we looked at those numbers, we'd probably see an increase rather than a decrease. But they're not in big cities, clearly, anymore.
Well, somebody knows, and they're not telling, and I think the story is not a good one. Anyway, Jan, thank you very much, buddy. I'm gonna invite you out somewhere this week just to get yet another excuse, or you start using them all over again.
He has a Rolodex of excuses.
He's got a Rolodex of excuses.
By imagination, Tom.
You know, Jan, there's like two kinds of people in this world, and I'm not saying where you are, but one of the guys used to live upstairs in Maddie's former apartment. I'll call him Todd. If you asked Todd to do something, he'd always give you an excuse, and it would be like, my mom died and I got to go to the wake, you know, and you'd say, well, okay, I get that part. But you always had the feeling that how convenient was that, because he didn't have to think up something else, because if his mom didn't just happen to die, he would have dug up somebody else, some uncle would have died in, like, Liberia or someplace, but he would just have thought up another excuse, you know, type of thing.
Like, so you think he was happy his mom died?
No, I'm just saying, I'm making a very gross generalization, but I'm saying he was happy if he had a real excuse, otherwise he had to make one up. It wasn't like if his mom, but the idea you're supposed to believe is my mom didn't die, I'd actually be playing center field for you tonight. No, his mom didn't die, there would have been another excuse, he still wouldn't have been out in center field, is my point.
So, I'll just have to redeem myself sometimes.
Yeah, go out there like the nun. Go out there and redeem yourself, Belushi. you're more like Aykroyd than Belushi. You're tall enough. S&P futures down on 1450. NASDAQ futures down 139 back. And Mr. Mike Hart's going to make sense of all this, and he's going to make us money for this week. I hope so, because we can use some. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allies, Mr. Weber on the board. SP Futures now on 1650. As that futures 155. I noticed Mike Hart, dude, sold these futures up 12 last night. See, if he sold 10 futures, now he's up 30. Just a typical 12-hour period for Mr. Mike Harp, from what I understand. Dow futures down 6. In Europe, we've got DAX only up 51 now, 0.3%. FTSE down 2, still flat. CAC around up 12.2%. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 8, call that flat. Shanghai down 30.8%. And Hang Seng up 16, call that flat. So not much going on over there, but last week it was all over the place with the Evergrande stuff, which we're going to talk to Mike about. Just a way of review, Friday, Dow was up 33, S&P up 6, NASDAQ down 4. So we were pretty much, let me see, we closed the week, we were up. We started the week in the SPY at 441, we finished at 443, but now we're back down to, actually 444, now we're back to 442.50. We're down a buck and a half in the pre-market. Bonds were the big story last week. Up another 5/32, 1.51. And, by the way, if you have a financial advisor that tells you, if interest rates go up, that stocks are gonna go up with it, please find a new one. I mean, I don't think that relationship is not gonna hold, gang. Bund up 3 to, wow, look at this, minus 0.19. Japan unchanged at positive 0.05. Oil, up $1.44 now, no inflation. 75.42, so that's up 2%. Brent up $1.43, 79.52. Natural gas up 26 cents, 5.40. Mike, did you buy the dip at this at 4.90? Wow, 50 cents in like a week. God's sake, a natural gas. Arbob up 2 cents, 2.20 plus. That's a massive contract. If you had a couple of those, you'd be very, very... Gold only down 79 cents, so inflation going to the moon, we actually got gold unchanged. That's pretty good. Silver up 26 cents, 22.68. And we've got crypto, which got clobbered last week. It's only up 2.14 this week, 43,495. When I say crypto, I mean Bitcoin. Manny, we got for us traffic, weather, sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still working on that crash that happened on the Dan Ryan last hour. It's been moved to the right shoulder. This is on the inbound side.
5 cars were involved in this accident just before 71st Street on the inbound side. They have it down to just blocking the right shoulder right now, but significant congestion affecting both the Ryan and the Bishop Ford as part of this big crash here on the inbound Dan Ryan, so keep that in mind. Earlier crash on I-80 eastbound side at near Joliet is all clear, so I-80 is fine now in both directions. We do have an issue on I-55 northbound just before Illinois 126. That's exit 261. Expect stop-and-go traffic there. That's way southwest in the far-reaching southwest suburbs. We also have a crash Maple Avenue at Elm Street. That's right off of the tri-state there near Naperville. So that's what's going on down south and southwest. If you're coming inbound on the Stevenson, normal traffic volumes there. Same for the Eisenhower and Kennedy. Traffic building steadily, but no other crashes to report. Weather today, a beautiful early fall day. Sunshine, warm temperatures, a high of 84. Right now it's crystal clear and 68 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, pretty much identical weather down in Phoenix as it is here in Chicago. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 85. Right now it's clear and 69. In sports, the Bears are now 1-2. They were blown out by Cleveland 26-6. Cardinals are 3-0. They beat up on the Jaguars 31-19. Sunday Night Football, it was the Packers getting a last-second field goal from Mason Crosby to top San Francisco 30-28. Major League Baseball, last week of the MLB season, White Sox have already clinched the division. They're 3 back of Houston for home field in the first round as they beat Cleveland 5-2. Astros have dropped 3 in a row, so that should come down to the wire here this week. Cubs, of course, are eliminated. They were doubled up by the Cardinals 4-2. Cardinals have won 16 games in a row, a franchise record. Diamondbacks were shut out by the Dodgers 3-0.
How many would they have in a row, making a row if they get to play the Cubs the next week?
Well, they probably went out. Lastly, the United States blew out Europe in the Ryder Cup, the biggest loss in the European history in the Ryder Cup, as they fell 19-9. Chief.
Mike, normally I would banter with Maddie about the wild card race, but we'll do that tomorrow because with all that's happened in the market here, you are our focus, buddy. We got the VIX back up to 20. We got the market virtually unchanged from a week ago Friday. And yet it was all over the place. We've got the bonds. Is this the move? I've been trying to be short these TLTs forever. And of course, in the $3 move, I wasn't, but now I got short again and they're heading south here. Is this it? I mean, this is a massive move in these interest rates in a week.
It's a massive move. Absolutely. And you know, what I find interesting is sometimes I look at other underlyings that represent what it is we're looking at. So rather than just looking at the futures and what they're doing, which of course you can get a good feel by the bonds by looking at the bond futures, but I check out like ETFs like TLT. I look at when I'm thinking about metals, I'll check out what GLD is doing, GDXJ, GDX. Those are all gold mining or gold holding or gold mining industries, where you can get a feel for what's going on volatility-wise by just checking out a list of liquid ETFs. And what I'm seeing right now is you have, let me just pull up the page because I was looking at it earlier and I thought it was pretty interesting. So I pulled up the page of liquid ETFs on my platform and you have emerging markets as among the highest of all of them. And then you have gold, followed by bonds, followed by tech. So that's sort of the progression of where risk might be being placed this morning when you take it sort of from the angle of volatility. That's what we're looking at. I think there is a lot of fear out there, Chief. And when you look at the chart, you can see that movement. But when you are just looking at prices and closes on the day, it doesn't seem like much is going on.
It isn't, but it is. You don't have a week like last week in a normal world. You've got. I'm looking at the Fed balance sheet here, and again, I hope they never say if they drag me on national TV, which I don't want to go. They have to be kicking and screaming. What did Lyndon Johnson say? If nominated, I will not run. If elected, I will not serve. Something along those lines. Anyway, what can even, how can you even look at the numbers, Mike? And when you've got a hundred and, where are we here? The balance sheet today in the Fed is 8,489,000,000,000. 2 weeks ago, it was 8,357,000,000,000. So we're talking $132 billion in 2 weeks. How can you look, how can you look at any market that these guys aren't touching and aren't affecting? You can't sit back and say, well, whatever kind of bad thing you're looking at, you can't look at it because the market doesn't, has no problem with it. It's just going up. I mean, the rest of the world, that the market knows everything, you know nothing, which is, by the way, I used to believe that. And it, whatever you think is bad, there's something you don't know about that's twice as good, and it's going up. And I, someplace somewhere, because I mean, I saw it in the 80s, early 80s, actually 81 or 82, right, specifically, someplace somewhere, people are going to wake up and they're not going to invest their money for a negative 5 interest rate. It, they're just not going to. And because it's such a horse bleep trade that we can't all be that stupid that long, you know. And people say, well, we'll look at the tips, but Mike, the Fed's buying the tips too. How do you even look at those? I mean, is this finally it? That all, I mean, we're only with a 10 year. By the way, if you want to see the 10 year, you look at the TNX, right? 30 years of TYX. Yeah. Well, the TNX is now 1498, which means 1.49. I'm going to say it was what? One, it was 12 something 3 weeks ago. So that's
about right.
So yep. You know, that's a huge move in there. You can't trade the TNX or the I don't believe you can you? I mean, there was some thought about maybe trading it, but I don't think you can. Enlighten me, Mike. Can you? I don't think you can. I know.
I mean, you can't say when you're in the middle of the market. You really can't put pieces together here because the pieces don't add up to anything we've ever seen before. We've never seen this type of asset inflation, this magnitude and this speed. We don't have much reference going back through history to sort of what worldwide is going on in financial markets. And all we know is that inflation is very real, asset prices are inflating enormously, and the normal regulation or the normal thing that kept that in check is not being used, which is the interest rates. So you're seeing sort of a double magnification of I'm not going to say the worst case scenario, but the setup of a very bad scenario that could lead to, you know, a massive sell-off at some point. And I really am in the camp that there will be a massive sell-off at some point. I wasn't for a while, but I think we're too far at this point to make a reasonable decline or hold the market steady for a long enough period of time for that to sort of catch up to where it needs to be to sustain these levels.
Well, I thought, Mike, honestly, even though I was doing my best to warn against it, I mean, in case some Fed official happened to stumble upon us, and I actually thought a year ago when you and I, well, we've been doing this for a while, but I actually thought a year ago, and even though I would kind of poke you with a stick as much as I could to get your ideas out, because I didn't want just mine, which people get every day. I really thought a year ago, when we were talking about a $7.5 trillion federal budget thing, that they probably hadn't gone so far where they couldn't still save it. That, when I say save it,
right?
But now this last year, when I think it's gotten totally out of control, and now we're talking about a $3.5 trillion another, you know, thing. I think we're just debasing our currency. I actually said that to one lady, we were watching the game at halftime. She goes, well, everything is going up, things must be good. I said, well, they're going up in relation to what? I said, in relation to the dollar in your pocket. I think it's just the dollar going down. And that's, but
exactly.
we're not used to thinking that way at all, Mike. I mean, we're just not.
We're used to seeing higher prices, higher value.
Yeah.
And you could totally make the argument that we have higher prices and equal or less value. You could at least make that that point, and that would change sort of the outlook of this very rosy market that we appear to be in. I would make the argument it's not as strong as it looks, and we can't just go off price change to the upside. I mean, if it just kept going up, fantastic, but we know throughout history there's no market that can continue to go up higher and higher. You know, the law of economics and the science of economics is real, and we know that's not a possibility.
Well, Mike, what can you estimate? We've talked, I think, more on this show really than anybody because of Jeff and Luckbox's research into the China situation. Because, I mean, I've learned a boatload about the what's going on in China from Jeff. Just in terms of the basic situation, and we'll talk to him tomorrow about the political overtones. Elon Musk this weekend basically told everybody he's all in on China. I mean, if he had to make the choice between America and China, he's picking China. I mean, that's almost right. The read I got from it. I don't, if he was sitting here, he'd probably tell me that's not what he meant, but, it almost seems that way. China is going to be forcing people to decide here. I mean, they pretty much did that with Australia recently, right? And Australia pulled back and said, no, we're not going with you guys. And they ordered a bunch of submarines or nuclear technology, right? In the midst of this mess that we're kind of our own doing, I think, here, COVID wasn't our own doing, but up until then, we were already halfway in the hole. And now COVID has made things a lot worse, plus our response to it, I think, has made things even worse. Or in the beginning, probably no, but now that we've politicized the damn thing, we've got it even more ridiculous. But what kind of a wild card can China be here? I mean, can they be the catalyst that when your house is straining under the hurricane, it's somebody comes by with loses control of the bulldozer because he had too much to drink and wipes out your foundation or what? I mean, it's almost like out of all the times China wants to be a pain in the ass, this is almost kind of not the time, and yet they are. Or am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. The financial system is global, and we've seen that in the past. We saw a problem in Argentina back in the 90s bring down one of the largest hedge funds in the United States, long-term capital management. And it was from this, basically they called it contagion of of debt that it's the intertwining of all of the banks and the networking of all of the banks around the world. So if you got a pin like China that falls, it's that domino effect that really scares everyone. Because if the Chinese economy did poorly, it would affect other markets, but it might not do it to the magnitude of defaulting on banks around the world. And to me, that's kind of the scariest thing that could happen if, like you said, the right players don't step in and the right choices aren't made. And then when you start talking about the threat of violence or a protectorate sort of government where you're sending out submarines, things like that, it adds to the fire. And that can cause extreme volatility in the market. We could look at it as trading opportunity, but at the same time, we might be dealing with a violent increase in volatility over a situation that you think wouldn't affect the U.S. all that much, but in reality, it could have a major influence on the movement of the market.
Well, Mike, when you say extreme volatility, now, in our world, extreme volatility, and this is how the definition of that term has kind of slid now. Because nobody wants to say we could get a big sell-off on the air because people are going to change the channel, right? So, when you say volatility, let's put it this way. When I say volatility, I mean markets get essentially more volatile without necessarily a direction. It just means they could be up 2% one day, down 2% the next. That the day-to-day movements get bigger and more pronounced, okay? What the definition that's now becoming volatility means it might go down. Where are you on that definition? Are you still with me, the classical definition, or are you with them?
That's a good question. I think we have sort of turned the corner on what extreme volatility means. And I think traditionally I would have thought of extreme volatility as the market just tanking and tanking and tanking, and you get extreme volatility to the upside. But you think about last Monday when we were talking, Chief, market is down 75 points, possibly the S&P 500, somewhere around there.
Yep.
And we saw a really large percentage increase. It was $6 in the VIX. And when you think about the magnitude of the move to the downside relative to the magnitude of the move of the VIX, that to me is extreme volatility, in the sense that volatility is very sensitive right now to movement in the market. And any type of down movement seems to be causing more and more uncertainty in the market. And I'm sort of in the camp that you could see volatility increasing as the market increases, just because the world events are so uncertain at this point, and there's so many unknowns that I think it's hard for option traders to place much certainty. They need to get paid more for those options, and the law of supply and demand comes together. You end up with more expensive option prices, and higher option prices implies, we can imply what that volatility is, and it's going to be much higher.
Well, the VIX right now is, this morning, is pushing 20. And, you know, we're down this morning, but not that much. And in last week, for lack of a better term, was an even week. And we're still pretty close to all-time high. So in 2007, this would have equated to a VIX of about 10, and now it's 20. But in my definition world is, if we have bonds down, you know, limit down, which we haven't seen in so long, like 4 days in a row, and all of a sudden the 10-year rate's 2.2, and the market opens down, you know, 1,000 spook points, to me, that's not volatility. That's just a reprice, right?
I hear you completely. That's a resetting of the price, which when the higher and higher you get in a market, you know, the more likely that, I shouldn't say more likely because that's the incorrect mathematical way of saying it. But, you know, the tail risk does exist for a repricing of assets. And that's tail risk, and that risk is there. It seems to increase the longer we go without seeing tail risk, and the greater the extreme becomes.
Yeah, I mean, they used to refer to that as, before they, people shortcutted it to that, it was the risk of a two or three or more, standard deviation move.
That's right.
And now we call it the black swan event or the fat tail risk. But it's the same definition, basically. Except nobody knows what standard deviation is.
It's the exact same thing.
Except how many young kids know what a standard deviation is?
That's not enough. like it's the way of the future, describing trading through standard deviations of movement. But yeah, definitely not enough of these young kids know it.
Which, do you see, I'm sensing, I mean, this is just one man's opinion, this is not, certainly not investment advice. I think the stocks, and not because I put them in there, I didn't, I do put my people mostly in indexes. A lot of the stocks that my people have, Mike, have potential, well, I think if the interest rates move, the whole market's gonna move. That's why there's no such thing, I think, now as being diversified. Because we're all hanging on what the Fed's doing. If the Fed stops doing it, interest and the risk-free rate goes back to 3%, everything is going to reprice. It doesn't matter. But I think a lot of the stocks that my people have are you know, have a 15-20% risk. But some of the stuff, just like 1999, that's trading for, you know, I mean, if you've got one of these bad boys that are trading as much as you like them, that are trading, you know, 80 times revenue and 300 times earnings, if there isn't any earnings, I think you need to take a close look at them. I mean, some are going to be good, but some aren't. You know, I mean, I don't see those prices hanging in there if we see this droning of this 10-year rate going up every day.
I completely agree. I think, you know, especially, you know, I think ETFs are great. I spent a lot of my time trading ETFs. I put my own personal money in ETFs. It just is it's a way to reduce risk without getting too technical. It's the underlying itself carries less risk. So I do like that. The meme stocks out there, I view that as a fad. I play them. I do play them. I play them very small, and it's not my bread and butter. The things that are rallying 50% in a day, in my experience, has always been a short-lived life cycle, and you don't see that pattern continue for very long. I don't think many of these stocks that are just showing tremendous gains can hang in there long enough to sustain those prices.
Well, if there's a reason for it, if you just got a drug or you got some massive contract and you're going to make all that money, you know, you can double in a day.
Oh, sure.
It might not be enough, but that's not all over the place. Mike, have a great week, buddy. Not enough time as usual because this VIX story is getting bigger by the day. We could spend hours on it. Anyway, have a big week. SP futures now only down 9. They were down more. NASDAQ futures only down 115. They were down more. So we're coming back a little bit. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.